And now it's time for Power of Prophecy with your host, former professor at the University of Texas at Austin, career United States Air Force officer, and best-selling author, Tex Mars.
Hello, friends. Well, today we've got a big day for you here on Power of Prophecy. Some of you may have tuned in to television's presidential debates of the Democrats and Republicans. Well, today we're going to look behind the curtain at the candidates. In fact, we're going to discover the truth about the whole motley crew. That's what I call them. You know, motley is a good word. I really have not looked up the definition in Webster's dictionary, but I basically think it means a bunch of mediocre, know nothing, no goods. I'd make up my own definition in saying that, but the whole motley crew, everybody knows what that means. That means the bunch of no good. Well, anyway, that's what it means. The whole motley crew. And I put Obama and Edwards and Hillary in with that. And I'll be very honest with you, by the time this program is over, you'll see evidence that Giuliani and Huckabee and everybody but Ron Paul basically are all of the same cloth. Let's just say they're all men and women of the cloth. They're cut out of the same cloth. Where that cloth comes from, well, evidently the devil has a great big textile plant down in hell, and he makes a lot of cloth, and he cuts out, you know, gets a bolt of it and cuts them all out of the same bolt of cloth. So from the devil's textile plant. That may be a bold statement on my part, because every time when the elections come up, people start choosing Republican or Democrat, Republican or Democrat. You know, it's interesting. I've never really been Republican or Democrat. I guess that's a skeleton in my closet. I remember when I came out with, I think it was my book, Dark Majesty, I was scheduled to go down to Florida to be on a TV program, and the host called me and he said, Tex, we're going to have to cancel that radio program, that TV program. I said, oh? Yeah, Dr. Crossley told me. He was the host of that show, Dr. George Crossley, Central Florida Forum. He said, we have to cancel because my Republican Party friends are complaining about your book where you expose the fact that George Bush is a member of the Order of Skull and Bones. And they're just mad as wet hens about you. Why would you put out a book like that, said Crossley? Aren't you a Republican? I said, well, no, I'm not a Republican. Well, I thought you were. Aren't you a Bible-believing conservative Christian? I said, yes. Well, then that would make you a Republican. I said, no. I didn't know that Jesus was a member of the Republican Party. Well, as events would have it, well, we see, but by the way, I also told him I was not a Democrat. Far from it. He said, well, do you know even what you are? I said, yes, I'm a Christian. That's my worldview. That's my paradigm. When I came to know Jesus Christ, as the New Agers would say, I had a paradigm shift. Everything in my thinking changed. And then I just saw the light. What an amazing thing. A light bulb went off in my heart and mind. And I believe that happens to many Christians. I was listening to the Marlon Maddox show one time. The late Marlon Maddox, a fine Christian gentleman from Dallas, Texas. I was on his radio program as a guest many times, and we both flew out to Virginia together and did a conference out there. But Marlon had a guest on, a doctor, in fact, and he was asking the doctor what he thought about abortion. And he said, well, you know, just recently I've changed my mind. I'm against it. I'm pro-life now. And Marlon said, well, when did that happen? He said, just a couple years ago, I became pro-life. Marlon said, well, when did you become a Christian? Oh, that was long ago when I was a little boy. Well, how long were you an abortionist? Well, you know, so many years, he said. You were a Christian and you believed in abortion at the same time? The guy said, yes. And Marlon said, I know, I think you were just a fake. I don't even know if you're a Christian right now. He just told the guy off. You know, you can't say I'm for abortion and I'm a Christian, so, you know, get out of my sight was what basically what Marlon said. And that was unusual because Marlon Maddox was a very nice fella. But, you know, he didn't lack a bunch of nonsense from a guest who claimed to be one thing. At least the guy finally came to himself. Maybe he was like the prodigal son. You know, maybe Marlon should have given the guy a break. I know of a lot of people that, you know, came to themselves after a long period of degradation and sin. They realized the boat that they were in was headed straight for, Niagara Falls, and they decided to jump boat and swim to shore while there was still time. But Marlon didn't much like that he claimed to have been a Christian all those years and yet was pro-abortion. Well, today I want to talk to you about the whole Motley Crue. And you know, what we're really dealing with here is what Henry Macau, a man who I highly respect, he's a Jewish Christian, Dr. Henry Macau, he's the inventor of the game Scruples. Now, I've never played Scruples. I'm not a real game player, but evidently there's a game called Scruples, and he invented it. Which makes sense to me because Henry Macau writes a whole lot on the internet, on rents.com and other websites, and I always like what Henry Macau has to say. Now, again, he's a Jewish Christian, but he exposes the Illuminati. Now, here again is the reason why we don't hate Jews or we don't hate anybody else here. We do expose the global Zionist conspiracy, but when you have a man like Henry Macau who, well, he exposes them too, and he's Jewish, what can you say? But thank God for him. Well, Henry Macau wrote an article recently that I like called The World of Illuminati Make-Believe. Isn't that what politics is all about? Well, Henry Macau said something. He says, if you ask Genghis Khan, if you live back in those days, Genghis Khan, you know, the Mongol conqueror and mass murder. If you ask Genghis Khan for his formula for world conquest, you'd expect to hear him say something like overwhelming force or terror. That'd be the way he would do it, right? That's his agenda. That's the way he would conquer. Overwhelming force, terror, murder, death, bloodshed. You would not expect, writes Henry, to hear make-believe. Make-believe. He said, what is this, a diabolical Disney? And then Macau says this. He says, yet in the first protocol of the protocols of the elders of Zion, the author says three times, quote, our countersign is force and make-believe. This is how the Zionist world conspirators work. Yes, they do use force. They're using the United States right now to force the circular-shaped Muslims into a square peg. That's what they're doing. Force. But wait. In the United States, so far, they're not using a lot of force. Now, I know some people have been punished and persecuted. But as a whole, they've decided to use a different tactic with us, have they not? And that tactic is make-believe. They can make-believe, pretend things, and people will believe it. And you know, it's so much easier to conquer people when you acquire their minds. Oh, it's so much cheaper. Instead of forcing them to be a slave, they are a willing volunteer to be a slave on your global plantation. Make-believe. Henry Macau says, I assume he means, that's the writer of the protocols of the elders of Zion, I assume he means mass deception when he uses the term make-believe. So you see, they can either use force or make-believe. Now, in the area of presidential politics, in fact, all politics practically in the United States, at the state and federal level, what we have is make-believe. How are they doing it? Well, they use a little tactic, a scientific tactic It's quite clever. I give them all the credit in the world for coming up with it. It's called dialecticism, or Hegelian dialectics. It's called this because George Hegel, who lived, many decades ago, in fact, last century, he had a distinctive philosophy of history. He said it's necessary for the state, that is the government, to use a process. It is a process, a systems process. And in this systems process, he says, first of all, you take what is, that's the thesis, and then you propose that there's a second method out there, a second way, that would to do things so you won't change. And that would be the antithesis or antithesis. So you have what is, you know, civilization, culture as it is. But then along comes a group that says, wait just a minute, we want to change things. And they have a new thesis. They want a new way of doing things. And that's the antithesis. They're against what is. Sort of like, you know, the conservatives are what we have, and then the liberals come up and say, we've got to change things. And Hegel says that these two, the thesis people and the antithesis people, the change folks, they combat each other. They fight. There's a struggle. And out of that comes a compromise. A little bit of this comes in, a little bit of that. Something stays the same, but other things change. Finally, you come up with a compromise. It's sort of like, you know, you take a horse, and I don't know what other animal would you have, you know, a giraffe, and you mix them together, and you come out with a camel. Well, you still don't have much of an animal. But you got, he has humps on him. He's not perfect. But that's the synthesis. What comes out of the struggle between the thesis and the antithesis is the synthesis. So you take the horse, and they say, we need to change him, the giraffe people say. So you combine the two together, and you get something called the camel. He has humps. He's not perfect. And that means there will be people to complain about him. Well, this camel needs to be changed too. The camel has become the thesis, you see, what is. And now what ought to be, the crowd comes up and says, let's change him. I guess finally you come up with some incredible creature that looks like he comes out of the Star Wars movies. And that's sort of what society is becoming. We're becoming deformed. We're becoming misshapen. We're becoming strange creatures here on earth. And what we believe is being shaped by this Hegelian process, this dialectical process. Marx believed in it. Darwin believed in it. That's what evolution basically is. The forces of nature reshaping things and everything continually changing. And the Masons have it as their 33rd degree motto. They call it Ardo Ab Cao. You see, things are in equilibrium, but then there's forces that come forth to change what's in equilibrium, and they create chaos. But wait, but through the process of Hegelian dialectics will come order once again, ordo ab chaos, or ordo ab cao in Latin, and order out of chaos. But once you get order again, well, then there's more change that's proposed. And then you continue the process all the way to the end of time. Never-ending, continual chaos, order. Action, reaction, solution, but only temporary. Revolutionary process, ever continuing. The conflict, a continuing, perpetual motion thing, and that's why they even use the term, because wars are part of this, and revolutions, perpetual war for perpetual peace. We need peace, so we've got to fight a war. And then after the war is over, you have peace, well, we got to fight another war to get something else we want. And then you get peace, well, you got to fight more wars. And when the wars aren't enough, you got to create artificial obstacles to happiness, like, you know, global warming or something else like that. Okay. Hegel proposed that man could only be free to the extent that he's part of this dialectical, never-ending process. In other words, he's never free. He's never free. Now, when we look at politics today, this is what it is. There are two sides, and people think they're different, but they're all the same. And right now we're in a stage in history. We've reached equilibrium so that the Republicans and the Democrats are just alike. But they will throw in little things that seem to be different. You say, well, no, wait just a minute, Tex. Isn't this different? And they look for little bitty marginal things that are different. And we're in a really the equilibrium stage. Everything is sort of the same. It will change soon because of this ardo ab cao dialectical process. But I want to point out today that basically we're in a period of equilibrium. We are. We're in a period of equilibrium. All the candidates think the same. They may seem to be different, but you will find that they're not. Patrick Buchanan is a man who seemed to be different, but suddenly he joined the Republicans again. He became the leader of something called the Reform Party, and he brought it down into perdition. He destroyed it. He led it to become its destroyer. That's what they do. You see, the Reform Party, they said, we've got to change the Democrat-Republican system. We'll set up a third party. But then a man who was a Republican and part of the system joined it and killed it. And then we had order again. Good going, Patrick Buchanan. But he does write an interesting article recently that I read, and it's called Conservatism is a Tower of Babel. Now Patrick says we need to change conservatism because conservatism isn't conservatism anymore. The liberals have taken it over. Well, not exactly. Now they call them neocons. They're the new conservatives. They're not the old conservatives. They're the new. You see, after the commotion of the ordo ab cao process, after the Hegelian dialectic has worked, suddenly we have Republicans that are different than what they used to be. I know many of you are out there scratching your heads. The Republican Party is not the Republican Party anymore. Of course not. And the Democrat Party isn't the same either. And next year they'll be different again. And if you're one of those yellow dog or blue dog, whatever the color of the dog is this year, Republican or Democrat, well, I'm sorry, but, you know, you're going to vote on a dead dog. He's dead. The dog that you believed in is dead. You better find out who the new dog around is. He might just be a pit bull and eat your leg off if you don't. He says in an article from WorldNet Daily, boy, that's a neocon organization on the net, news organization. He says conservatism is now a Tower of Babel. That means confusion. He said Fred Thompson said to the Conservative Party of New York, I was conservative yesterday, I'm a conservative today, and I will be a conservative tomorrow. And they all applauded. But what did it mean, since Fred Thompson is really not a conservative at all? Well, it means whatever they think it means. One person says, that's right, he is. The next person says, yeah, that's right, he is. Another person says, no, he's not. Well, what is a conservative? What does it mean to be a conservative in 2007, 2008? Ask Patrick Buchanan. He has his own idea about conservatism. And he asked, will the real conservatives please stand up? And he can't find any. He says, Fred Barnes, who's a Fox News commentator, and puts out, what is it, the Weekly Standard, which is a neocon magazine. He's the editor of that. It's run by a man named Crystal, a neocon Trotsky Jew. But Fred Barnes says that it's still a Republican Party, but it just favors something called big government conservatism. Huh? Now, Reagan said he was for smaller government. Barry Goldwater said, I'm almost for no government at all. I think it was Jefferson who said that government is best which governs least. But now we have big government conservatism. George W. Bush is the biggest tax spender of all time. The biggest spender of all American history. But they say he's a conservative. So what really is a conservative? Is it conservative to attempt to create a new world order? Well, the senior Bush declared that is his goal at the United Nations. Is that what a conservative does? Well, old conservatives like Robert Taft and Barry Goldwater, they didn't agree to that. They thought we ought to stay home and mind and tend our own business. So he says the once great house of conservatism is a Tower of Babel. We are big government and small government. Tax cutter and big spender. Free trader and economic nationalist. Bush and McCain support amnesty for illegals. But then they claim they want to build a border fence, which they never get around to building. Interesting. Rudy Giuliani, who has a record of being very, very pro-abortion, says, if I am elected president, the mayor says, I will appoint judges who are strict constructionists of the Constitution. Now, that term used to mean they would be pro-life, but it doesn't mean it anymore. Better watch out. A strict constructionist. Hillary Clinton said the same thing. She believes in conservatively approaching the Constitution. She says, I will appoint judges. This is Hillary Clinton, who believe in the Constitution. And in our Constitution is the woman's right to choose. Oh, well, you know, that's what the Supreme Court ruled in Roe versus Wade, that women have a right to choose murder through abortion. And according to Giuliani, then, that's what a strict constructionist would believe in. Whatever the Supreme Court says. That's how they constructed our laws. Well, then, that's a strict constructionist. You better watch out, friends. You got to ask people specifically. You know, I was debating a New Age occultist Satanist. And the host of the radio show I was on asked this woman that I was debating. Now, we had a debate. Ask her about her religious beliefs. And she says, I believe in Jesus. The host comes back to me and says, Tex, what are y'all arguing about here? What's the debate about? You know, she believes, the New Age psychic here, believes in Jesus too. She just said it. I believe in Jesus. So I ask her, is Jesus Lord of all? She says, well, of course he is. We are all Lord. Oh, we're all Lord? Yes, we are all Christ. He was our representative, and now we're all Christ. I believe in the Christ consciousness. I believe that humanity is collectively Christ. And Jesus was my model. What about these things in the Bible where he says, I am the way, the life, and the truth. No man comes to the Father but by me. Oh, the Bible. I don't believe in the Bible, she said. I believe in Jesus, the compassionate leader. Oh. Another Jesus, another gospel. But if you just listen to her, do you believe in Jesus? Yes, I do. You see what I'm saying, friends? Watch out. And by the way, Pat Buchanan talks about Rudy Giuliani here. He says, Rudy, a McGovernite in 1972. In other words, he supported George McGovern, the most liberal of Democrats in 1972. Rudy was a registered Democrat. He boasted in the campaign of 1993 that he would, quote, rekindle the Rockefeller Javits Lefkowitz tradition of New York's GOP and, quote, produce the same kind of change New York City saw with Democrat John Lindsay. Rudy Giuliani even ran on the Liberal Party ticket and supported Mario Cuomo for governor in 1994. Mario Cuomo. How much more liberal can you get than that? Buchanan goes on to say, Rudy Giuliani is pro-abortion, anti-gun, and again, he strutted up Fifth Avenue in the June Gay Pride Parade, and he turned the Big Apple, that's New York City, into a sanctuary city for illegal aliens. As far as discrimination, he's for reverse discrimination because Rudy, says Buchanan, is an affirmative action man. And yet, gravitating now to Rudy's camp are those opportunists, the neocons, who see in Giuliani their last hope of redemption for their cakewalk war, they call it, in the Middle East. And their Rudy says the best hope of the Christian evangelicals for a long war against something called Islamofascism. Oh, Rudy Giuliani, he's America's mayor. He's the 9/11 hero. He's going to lead America into a war against terrorism, just like George W. did. Mm-hmm. He's a conservative. Or, well, is he? Pat Buchanan has the courage at least to say that Rudy offers the right, that is the right wing of the Republican Party, the ultimate Faustian bargain, retention of power at the price of one's soul. Interesting. Now, when you listen to the debates, and I've heard a few, and I don't really like to listen to them much, whether it's Fox News or CNN or NBC or whoever who is sponsoring them, because you never really hear proper questions asked. They're all put-up questions. It's make-believe. It's make-believe, just like the Protocols of Zion says. You never really find out what the candidates believe about American sovereignty, the North American Union, the NAFTA superhighway, illegal immigration. They lie. They never tell you anything. Secret societies, globalism, the United Nations, the diabolical concept of preemptive war. What is that? Well, you never hear them talk about that. Corporate fascism, big oil, the pharmaceutical companies, the scandal of the corporations today. They never address that issue. The police state, our Bill of Rights, torture, the Patriot Act, the Hate Crimes Act. They're not going to talk about that. Economic freedom versus government control, government bureaucracy, regulating every aspect of our life. They never debate that. IRS atrocities, the raising of taxes over and over again. They don't talk about that. How about 501c3 IRS control of churches? That's something they dodge like crazy. And the Christian evangelicals talk about some mixed up people. All you have to do is say, I believe in Jesus and I'm pro-life and I'm pro-Israel. Oh my goodness, we've got a man right now. He can be for the North American Union and the end of American sovereignty. We don't care about that. We're a Christian evangelical. He could be a member of the Order of Skull and Bones. I don't care about that. He's pro-life. He can be for amnesty for the 40 or how many ever million, nobody really knows, aliens in America, illegal aliens. We don't care about that. Well, he's pro-life. Friends, you got to look at the whole picture here. You got to look at the whole man concept. And then people are so mixed up, they don't even understand that when a guy says he's against abortion, that may not be so at all. Why, Bill and Hillary Clinton, I've heard them say so many times they are against abortion. They're just for a woman's right to have abortions. Stay with us, friends. We're going to give you some specifics about what the candidates really believe, Huckabee and all the rest of them, when we come back. You're listening to Power of Prophecy, and we're examining the whole Motley Crue today. Stay with us. We'll be right back. Hello, friends. This is Tex Mars again. You know, I want to invite you to order our latest offering of Alex Jones' video. It's called End Game. End Game. An amazing video. It's 140 minutes in length. That's over 2 hours. 2.5 hours, to be exact. And it's called Endgame. And it's the blueprint of the elite. And boy, I'm telling you, it is a shocker. Bloodlust, that's all you can say about these men. Warmongering, death, and a population control. Endgame by Alex Jones. For $25, please add $4 shipping and handling. We'll send you Endgame, the newest video or DVD. It's only available in DVD right now, friends. Only in DVD. But we'll send you that with $29. That'll be postpaid now. $25 for the video, $4 shipping and handling. We only have it now in DVD disc at this time. Maybe later we can get it in VHS. So to get Endgame by Alex Jones, over 2 hours of solid facts and documentation of the horrible agenda of the elite, simply write to us at Power of Prophecy, 1708 Patterson Road, that's 1708 Patterson Road, Austin, Texas, 78733. Now, you can use your charge card. You can phone us during the workday. That's our workday, of course. Our time is 8 to 5:30 Central Time. That's 8 in the morning to 5:30 in the afternoon Central Standard Time, because we're in the state of Texas. That's where our headquarters is. And all you have to do is pick up the phone and call us toll-free and say, I want to use my charge card, and I would like to order the DVD, the video by Alex Jones called Endgame. That's all one word. It's all put together, Endgame. So our toll-free number is 1-800-234-9673. 1-800-234-9673. That number works in the United States and in Canada. If you're in some other country in the world, you can still order things from us. We love to have you order stuff from us. We love you to get on our mailing list, in fact. And you can simply phone us on our regular phone line if you're overseas, maybe in Ireland, Romania, who knows, Israel, even Iraq. We'll send you an order in Baghdad. Our phone number, our regular line, is area code 512-263-9780. Okay? Now let's return to our regular program. We're talking about the whole motley crew today. The whole motley crew. You know, there's one thing that they all agree on. Democrat, Republican, everybody but Ron Paul. I make him an exception. They're all Zionist warmongers. They're all Zionist warmongers. Now, Dennis Kucinich, the liberal Democrat, he may possibly be an exception, but he's never said one thing about Zionism, or so I'm not sure about that. If I'm wrong in that, correct me. But let's face it, he's not going to get anywhere anyway. Ron Paul, on the other hand, might get somewhere. He seems to be doing tremendous with his money-raising efforts. I say his, I think it's his supporters. He hasn't had to do anything. His supporters have been out there beating the bushes. Well, not, George Bush, but the bushes. I mean the figurative bushes. And drumming up support for Ron Paul, including an incredible amount of money that you need nowadays for political campaigns. And I wish them all the best in doing so. I individually support Ron Paul. Now, we don't here at the ministry, we don't endorse any candidates. So I'm telling you, as a person, as an individual, I support Ron Paul. And I'm going to vote for him given the chance. Does he agree with everything I believe in? Well, maybe not, but he certainly is the best candidate. And it's amazing the things that he does believe in that he and I agree on. And I believe that should be said of any Bible-believing Christian. The man's pro-life. Yes, he's pro-life. He's very strong in our Constitution, its Bill of Rights. So right away there, we have the freedom to worship, a freedom of free speech, and all those things, the dismantling of the police state, the ending of IRS atrocities, all of these things he stands for. And so does Tex Mars. And I suppose you do too, or you wouldn't be listening to this program unless you just listen to it every week just to curse me. And I think if you do that, because I get their letters periodically, but I don't curse them. I'm not going to retaliate. You're still my friends, whether or not you write me a mean letter or two. I like mean letters. It makes me feel alive. Then I know that I have some people I have to work on. And you know what? I love it when you actually listen to this radio program and you write me a mean letter, because I know I'm going to get to you eventually. Eventually, I'm going to turn you around. You can only take so much truth until finally, whammo! You know, all the dirty old stuff just kunk goes right out your ears and you're filled up with light. So that's what our goal is. We're the truth here and part of the truth movement. Now, I was reading an article. It's an old newspaper, and you know, every once in a while I'll find in my files an old newspaper or something, and I read it. Isn't that that's strange, isn't it? You know, sometimes there's interesting things. And I was reading this article, and then suddenly over here in the Newsmakers, there was a little bitty item, the picture of former New York Mayor Ed Koch, K-O-C-H. And I want to read you. Now, again, I'm agreeing. This is 15-year-old newspaper. But it tells you what all of them believe in, all of the present candidates. This is the guy before Giuliani, Ed Koch. He was Jewish, of course. Here's what he says. It says here, this was from the Los Angeles Times, 1991 newspaper. It says, the feisty former New York mayor stopped in Los Angeles to visit Ronald and Nancy Reagan last week at the former president's Century City office. He praised Reagan as, quote, the best U.S. president for Israel since it was created. And he said of Kitty Kelly, the author who just wrote a biography that was critical of the Reagans, quote, Kitty Kelly should be taken out and horsewhipped. Well, Ed Koch, though, now think of it. The former mayor of New York visits Ronald Reagan, now passed away, of course, and Nancy Reagan. And when he comes out, the news people are there. And what does he say? He praises Reagan as, quote, the best U.S. president for Israel since it was created. Now, you would think the mayor of America's largest city, New York, if he really thought Reagan was a great president, would say something like he was the best president of the United States. But he was the best president for Israel. Oh, my goodness. Isn't that amazing? I was reading a book, by the way. I believe it was by Edgar Bronfman of the World Jewish Congress. And he was talking about presidents. And he said, George Herbert Walker Bush was the best president for Israel. Now, you would think that these people would be the best president for Israel. Well, you know what? I thought about it after I read this. I says, well, of course. And George W. Bush is the best president for Israel, too. Not for America, but for Israel. These people are president of Israel. And I do believe Rudy Giuliani would make a great prime minister of Israel, don't you? And I think Mike Huckabee would. All of these people, they should go to Israel and run for office there. They would be great for Israel. They're all a bunch of Zionist warmongers who put Israel before America's best interest. Do you imagine the audacity of the former mayor of New York saying President Reagan was the best president for Israel since its founding in 1948? Huh? Huh? I understand that, though, because the Israeli organization, and it's a Jewish organization, the Council on Foreign Relations, has among its membership John McCain, Newt Gingrich, and almost all the other people. They're all members of the Council on Foreign Relations, a Jewish-run organization. And what is its goal? A new world Zionist order, of course. It's interesting that James Dobson, Gary Bauer, Don Wildman, and Tony Perkins, all high-level, you know, Christian right-wing bigwigs, held a 2006 Values Voter Summit in September of 2006. Guess who they invited to come there and speak to them? John McCain, a member of the Council on Foreign Relations. Newt Gingrich, a member of the Council on Foreign Relations. Of course, Gingrich also has been to the Bohemian Grove, where the homosexuals go around urinating on each other and doing other odd things. And he was there. Of course, Ronald Reagan was there. Of course, George Bush was there. Of course, Henry Kissinger was there. And James Dobson, you may as well go to the Bohemian Grove yourself, because you're inviting all the members of the Bohemian Grove to come and speak at your big wig meeting. And then, of course, Pat Robertson. Ever so often, he has a big freedom or victory rally of the Christian Coalition. Robert Dole, 33rd degree Mason, member of the Council on Foreign Relations, spoke one year. George Bush has been there to speak. Newt Gingrich has been there to speak. And by the way, Newt Gingrich was also a guest on James Dobson's program just 6 months ago. It doesn't matter if he's a, you know, has affairs going left and right. If he abandoned his wife while she had cancer in a hospital, he walked in and said, "Hey, I want a divorce. Bye. I got a new gal I'm having an affair with. So long. Sayonara, baby." He did that. You say, "Tex, you don't have any evidence of that." Of course I have evidence of that. I wouldn't say it if it wasn't true. I just quote one thing about the Council on Foreign Relations. Barry Goldwater, former senator, one of the last conservatives, said the goal of the Council on Foreign Relations is a new world order and the ending of American sovereignty. That's what Barry Goldwater said. Admiral Chester Ward of the U.S. Navy wrote a little booklet, and he said the Council on Foreign Relations' goal is to, quote, submerge our sovereignty and national independence into an all-powerful one-world government. If that's true, and John McCain and Newt Gingrich are members of it, that's their goal, and what was James Dobson doing inviting them? Well, as long as they're pro-Israel, it's okay. Really? You see, that's the only thing that matters to people like John Hagee and James Dobson and Pat Robertson. Are these people pro-Israel? Will they put Israel before America? Will they keep giving tens of billions of dollars of foreign aid and nuclear weaponry and bombs to Israel so it can oppress the Palestinians and the Arabs? If so, then we should vote for this man. Wow. But then Hillary Clinton is a Zionist. Bill Clinton is a Zionist. John Edwards, Obama, all of them are Zionist. Well, George Bush, though, is pro-life. Really, what has he done for us? Did he promote any legislation? Did you know, dear friends, that according to the Constitution of the United States, the U.S. Congress, listen to me very carefully, has the power and the constitutional authority to limit the jurisdiction of the Supreme Court of the United States? That's right. And it's been done before. Study your history. Hey, friends, I taught American government political science for years at university level. I'm a former professor of government and American government. And guess what? Our Constitution absolutely says that the Congress has the constitutional authority to limit the jurisdiction of the Supreme Court. One bill that says this: the Supreme Court may not make any decisions regarding abortion. That'd be the end of it. Now, they don't want to tell you that, do they? Nobody wants to tell you this, that they can tell the Supreme Court never again interfere in this issue. And the Supreme Court can't touch it. You say, well, the Supreme Court would have to be able to judge and make decisions based on anything. I'm telling you what the Constitution says, friends. Not what some crazy person out there tells you. Now let's look at the individual candidates. Because I want you to know about these people. First of all, I have proven in my newsletters that Rudy Giuliani is pro-pornography, pro-homosexual. Hey, he's at the front of all the gay pride parades in New York City. Not only that, I know of at least three occasions when he's dressed up like a woman and gone out in public as a transvestite drag queen. pictures of him doing that or even on the internet. I put him on the internet myself. He lived with two gays. They were having a little threesome till it came out in the newspapers while he was mayor. He lived in an apartment with his two gay lovers. Well, now, Tex, how can that be? Because the man's been married three times, and he had an affair with the current woman, Judith Nathan, this Jewish woman that he's living with now. He married her. He was having an affair with her and cheated on his wife, who, by the way, was a lesbian, Miss Hanover, but that's another story. She was one of the stars in the Broadway play, The Vagina Monologues. Giuliani's wife, while he was married to her, she got involved in that, and then after they were divorced as well. In any case, he had to get married again after he divorced Hanover. He had to. Why? He wanted to be president. You got to be married. And you certainly don't want anybody to know about your living with two gay men. He's the B'nai B'rith candidate, though. That's the Masonic Lodge of New York. That's the Jewish Masonic Lodge. That's the Jewish ADL. He's their candidate. He's Richard Pearl, who's been called the Prince of Darkness, the godfather of the neocon movement. And by the way, even Newsweek magazine, which, you know, you can't believe everything they say, but in the current issue, they have a picture of Giuliani as a young man and a feature article entitled Rudy's Roots, How Growing Up in a Family of Cops and Hoods Shaped Giuliani's Moral Universe. You see, it says in there, it explains that basically he was born into the mafia. Sicilian Italian mafia. His father was sent to prison. I believe it was for robbery or some other crime. Like the fictional Tony Soprano, John Gotti, and all the other Italian gangsters, he was part of that system. But, you know, in the new generation, they want their sons to grow up and become lawyers and judges. Well, of course, once you become a judge, especially if you can become a district attorney or a U.S. attorney, you can get all the gangsters out of jail. So Giuliani, his father, went to prison and he went to law school. I'm telling you the truth. His father went to prison. He went to law school. And John Gotti... I'm sorry, Rudy Giuliani. I get them mixed up sometime. Giuliani became a bigwig in the Democrat Party, a liberal Democrat. But later, sometime in the 90s, it was decided that by the Jewish Italian mafia, the Jews run the Italian mafia. You better believe it. Read up about Meyer Lansky. Read about Bugsy Siegel in Las Vegas. You'll find out about the Jewish gangsters. They run. Even Jack Ruby, who killed Lee Harvey Oswald, his real name was Rubenstein. And he was a Jewish gangster, mafia. The Godfather, my friends, speaks Hebrew or Yiddish, believe me. Well, in any case, Giuliani became a lawyer. And then his political friends made him the U.S. attorney, I believe it was. And he's helped his friends. And then he took a Jew, Bernard Kerik, they set him up as the police commissioner of New York. And Bernard Kerik did all kind of little favors. You know, like Miss Nathan, who he was having an affair with, all she had to do was just call up the police, and they would send a car out. She didn't have to use taxis or limos. She used the New York Police Department as her personal, you know, errand boys. That was because Bernard Kerik, a Jewish mafia, who, by the way, has been indicted on a number of federal charges right now. He's awaiting trial on federal charges of corruption. He was the police commissioner that Giuliani was hand in glove with. And you know what? When George Bush needed a new director of the Homeland Security Department, he nominated Bernard Kerik, this corrupt Jewish police commissioner, to be the new Homeland Security director. But then stuff came out about him using police money to pay for apartments for his mistresses and things like that. And all that came out, and he couldn't be confirmed by Congress. So instead, Bush chose another Jewish ADL candidate, Michael Chertoff. Amazing, isn't it? Well, what did Bernard Kerik do then? Well, the Israeli government paid him millions of dollars to come over to Iraq and to Israel. And he went to Iraq and helped them set up the security apparatus of Iraq. A Jewish New York corrupt cop was paid by the U.S. government and Israel to come to Israel and then go over to Iraq and help set up security. I think it's spelled Abu Ghraib. Well, anyway. Amazing, isn't it? Just, it's so amazing. Well, let's read it, Giuliani. Pro-abortion. And yet, Pat Robertson has endorsed him. Well, of course, Pat Robertson is part of the Zionist network. How do you think he got access to a TV station in Lebanon? The Jews gave it to him. That's why he's a big supporter of the Jews. How do you think he ended up owning Liberian gold mines in Africa? The Jews gave it to him. His father was head of the Senate Banking and Currency Committee when they put the all-seeing eye in the pyramid on our $1 bill. Don't you get the point, friends? Now we go from Rudy Giuliani to Mike Huckabee. Talk about a Zionist warmonger. Boy, he is one. Hey, listen. President and founder of the Eagle Forum, Phyllis Schlafly, who really is a conservative, said this about Governor Huckabee. Quote, now listen to this, Phyllis Schlafly. He, that is Huckabee, destroyed the conservative movement in Arkansas and left the Republican Party a shambles. Now, Randy Minton, chairman of the Arkansas chapter of the Eagle Forum, said, quote, we call Huckabee a pro-life, pro-gun liberal. Really? We called him a pro-life, pro-gun liberal when I was in the state legislature. Really? Pro-life, pro-gun. But was he? Well, we'll see. Pastor Rick Scarborough, head of Vision America, says, Mike Huckabee has always sought the validation of elites. Paul Pressler, a former Texas judge who led the conservative Southern Baptist revolt, quote, said of Huckabee, quote, I know of no conservative he appointed while he headed the Arkansas Baptist Convention. Mike Huckabee headed the Arkansas Baptist Convention. He was a pastor in the Southern Baptist Convention. But he didn't appoint any conservatives position, only liberals. And that's why John Fund wrote in the Wall Street Journal that Mike Huckabee surrounded himself with liberals as governor, and he kept many of the agency heads that had been first appointed by Governor Bill Clinton. Getting the picture? As far as Giuliani being pro-illegal alien and making New York into a sanctuary city, here's what Jim Boulay, executive director of English First, says of Huckabee. He said, quote, Rudy Giuliani spent years defending the right of New York City to remain a sanctuary for illegal aliens. Yet Giuliani was a piker on illegal immigration in comparison to Mike Huckabee. As governor, Huckabee wanted to give free college scholarships to all illegal aliens. Huckabee said it was his Christian duty to help subvert and liberalize U.S. immigration laws. Listen to this. Huckabee, as an Arkansas legislator, actually introduced a bill that would allow aliens to vote and receive state benefits. Illegal aliens, Mexicans, Pakistanis in the country illegally should be able to vote, says Huckabee. And they should get all the benefits of citizens. I mean, even Arkansas citizens didn't get free college scholarships, but Huckabee wanted to give them to every illegal alien who applied for them. Say what? But he's a conservative. Well, not on tax matters. He raised taxes dozens of times. Now, Huckabee says, why, I had 90 tax cuts during my tenure as governor. He did. Little bitty ones. But the facts are different. An Arkansas Department of Finance and Administration report showed a net tax increase. The net, you know what the difference between net, don't you? And the other. Net tax increase of $505 million adjusted for inflation during Huckabee governorship. Taxes went up over $500 million even when you consider inflation. Huckabee is a liberal tax and spender. He supported five huge tax increases. He hiked state spending 65.3%. Well, he had to tax people to pay for it. The Cato Institute, a libertarian think tank, gave Huckabee an F grade for spending and taxes in 2006. F. He got a grade of F. Arkansas's general obligation debt rose by almost $1 billion. No wonder Grover Norquist, president of Americans for Tax Reform, says Huckabee refused to sign a no-tax pledge. Well, of course, how can you sign a pledge when you're planning on increasing taxes? He's pro-amnesty for illegal aliens. But, of course, he's pro-life. As long as you're pro-life and pro-Israel, the Christian evangelicals say, right on, brother. Then there's Fred Thompson. He was a paid lobbyist for an abortion group. That's come out. A paid lobbyist for an abortion group as an attorney. But remember what Fred Thompson said? I was a conservative yesterday. I'm a conservative today. And I will be a conservative tomorrow. A paid lobbyist for an abortion group. Oh, my goodness. Even Newsweek, MSNBC.com, says away from the cameras, it says the right wing has a crush on Fred Thompson. They love the guy, but his own papers suggest he is less conservative than they think. Here's something interesting. On a 1994 Eagle Forum survey, Thompson said he opposed criminalizing abortion. And he was opposed to a proposed constitutional amendment protecting the sanctity of human life. And he opposed any law that would limit partial birth abortion. Do you get that? He was in favor, in other words, of partial birth abortion. Wow. Partial birth abortion. That's taking the baby while it's still in the womb, pulling its head out of the womb and crushing the head. And then taking the dead baby out of the womb. Fully formed. Partial birth abortion. He was for it. Well, of course, now recently I heard him say on TV he's against abortion. I'm pro-life. But then Mitt Romney said that too. But he was one of the biggest abortion leaders, biggest gay leaders. In fact, Mitt Romney told a gay newspaper in Massachusetts when he ran for governor, he said, I will be better for gay rights than Senator Ted Kennedy is. I will be better for gay rights than Senator Ted Kennedy is. Four cities in the state of Massachusetts became sanctuary cities while Romney was governor. In other words, they supported, defended, and hid illegal aliens. Luke 16:15 says something very interesting. It says, And Jesus said unto them, Ye are they which justify yourselves before men, but God knoweth your hearts. These men are black-hearted men, dark-hearted men, the whole motley crew. And I make one small exception, Ron Paul. This is Tex Mars. You've been listening to Power of Prophecy. My prayer is you'll tune in each week during this same time and discover the power of prophecy. Thank you.